Hi, it's Marcia Cook, and it is we have a great show today, and I want to welcome everybody. And Denise is not here today, and we miss her, but we have Fran and I are doing the show together, and which we have done many shows together. And today is going to be a great show, and we want to thank, first of all, I want to thank all of the listeners that have been, since Virginia and I have been doing the World of Ink Network. Everybody's been fabulous, and they've been listening to our shows, and we've been, you know, changing dates and doing different things because we're just, you know, trying to tell everybody about writing and how they can help themselves and how they can get their work out there. And so we've been working on it, you know, nonstop. And so I want to thank everybody because it's working, because everybody's listening. And let's see, I have a couple announcements to make, and I don't want to forget it because Virginia has a new show tomorrow, and it's on at 6 Eastern, and Fran is here. Hi, I'm going to say hello to Fran because we're all now Eastern, Fran.
I'm here.
Okay, all right.
Yes, I'm
and
here.
So the show is The Family Matters. It's going to be 6 Eastern, and, you know, we're she's going to do it now with a new person, which is her name is Keisha Burcham, and it's going to be called Family Matters, and it's going to be a really good show, and it's going to be once a month, and it's going to be about parents and their kids and how to help empower kids and, you know, so there's no bullying and things like this. And we're really trying to do these things because Virginia, as we all know, she does the Children's Network, you know, for the Stories for Children publishing, and it's going to be a great show, and that's going to be once a month. And, okay, so we were going to talk today. We have a wonderful, wonderful author here. And beside that, I mean, I have just met him right, you know, a few minutes ago, but there's so many of the things that he's talked about writing and things that we're all, the people that are writers out there are really going to really be happy to, you know, meet Gerard DeMarini today. Hi. Hello, Gerard. Hi.
Hi, ladies.
And I know, Fran, do you want to talk about a little bit, because he's done so many things, and he has a wonderful book. It's called The Watchmen of Ephraim. And, you know, I was just reading everything on his website and everything, and it's everything that I've said and more, you know, and this book is a good book. It's a fast-paced book. It's on a, you know, a delicate subject, which, you know, Fran will talk about. And I just wanted to explain something that Fran – that comes on my on our show. It's called, you know, my show is a good story. It's a good story. And when Fran calls me up and says, I got a great book, then I go, fine, good, we'll have him on, okay? And she did. And Fran does the reviews. I don't do the reviews. I'm just, you know, I talk, as everybody knows. I like to talk. And Fran, I'm going to let Fran talk, you know, to Gerard, because she is a great reviewer, and she really went to the heart of the book. And Fran, do you want to begin any certain way, or do you want to just ask questions or go on as you know?
I'm going to ask questions because this review would take too long to read. It's very, very long. So what I'm going to do is sort of read. I have the book in front of me because the book has been in front of me. I'm just going to sort of read the back of the book and not give away too much, and then I'm going to ask Gerard some questions about the book. Because if I read the review, it's going to take like 20 minutes. It's very, very long. But they can find the review on Amazon, and I'm going to, after the show, repost his review on Facebook, on Reviewers Roundup and fellow writers and all the 20,000.
But you know what? I'll take it too. I'll put it on my blog again too. I'll do it again.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm writing myself a note. Otherwise, I'm going to repost the review so everybody could read it, because this is about 9/11. This is based on a true story, right? Right, Gerard, the first part of it?
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It is. And that's what really got me. When I was very, very lucky. Did I get this book from you, from Norm from Book Pleasures? That's how I got it?
Yes, you did. Yep,
right.
Norm was nice enough to pass me on to you, and I think I don't know if he knew the tie-in between your experience with 9/11 and losing your student there or not, but he definitely passed me on to you.
No, I was just lucky, because what happens when you give a book, you know, ask for a book in Book Pleasures, there's about 50 people or 40, whatever. And it depends on, you know, you have to be lucky to get on online just when he's posting the book, and then you have to be lucky that he gives it to you. So I was lucky that he gave it to me in 5 minutes.
Yeah, plus he's up in the French part of Canada there, and he saw my last name is French and started writing to me in French, and I said, I can just about write in English, Norm. So
yeah, well. he's he's an interesting man, but I'll tell you what, the reviews on his site are perfect, and they have to be done a certain way. So I did Gerard's, and I sent it to Norm, and then I sent Gerard a different, you know, and a second review, which I normally don't do, because I felt that 750 words was not enough to honor the book the way I wanted to. So I'm going to read the back cover, then I'm going to ask him some questions. So I don't want to give away anything, because I want everybody to go to Amazon while we're speaking and buy a couple of copies.
And you know, also, you know, I should just say one thing. You know, we'll give his website. Well, maybe we'll just give his website first, because I just want people to – his website is really good, because it has everything on it that, you know, you'd want in a website, you know. And I think – and he has author's picks. And I think the other thing I want to say is I want to thank you so much, Drive. You know why? Because you put our link on before the show. I think that is so great, and I really appreciate it. And I called Virginia, and I told her that too, because it's so nice that you did that for us. Because this way, you know, we do a lot, mostly a lot of people listen on demand, but we have a large audience now that are listening now. So, and I'm so glad you did that, and I want to thank you for that.
Oh, no, absolutely, ladies. You've helped me out a great deal, and I know a lot of author friends that got turned on and said, hey, you know, we know of the show and Blog Talk Radio in general, and they appreciate it.
I should say that. We got featured. Yes, we got featured today, and we are on the feature, at, you know, with your book, and it's great. And so thank you for that. Okay, Fran? Go ahead, please.
Okay, so we're going to start very simply. Gerard, could you just give everybody, instead of my reading the back cover, a summary of your book? Give them a short summary of the book, of what the book is about.
Sure. The book centers around a character named Chris De Niro, and Chris and I come from the same place, you know, the tough streets of Brooklyn, New York. The difference is Chris De Niro grows up and becomes a billionaire hedge fund manager. I was in the financial industry, so I actually knew a lot of people like Chris De Niro. And the story goes on. He gets married and he has children, and his wife ends up at the Trade Center in the North Tower when the American Airlines flight hit the North Tower, and he ends up losing his wife and his unborn child. And that starts the story into motion. That's really the premise behind the Watchmen of Ephraim. Is he, in order to deal with his rage and in order to deal with his frustrations, you know, his loneliness, his depression, he turns to his faith. And both Chris De Niro and I are Judeo-Christian, turn to the Bible, and he sees the Watchman of Ephraim, and Ephraim is a symbol of the United States. And so he decides he's going to become the Watchman. Instead of doing something negative and trying to get revenge, he decides he's going to try to do something positive and protect the United States and not let another 9/11 happen. And so he acquires a counterterrorism firm, and he renames it the Watchman. And the book goes on to deal with a situation that I based on some very, very troubling stories that I heard of having terrorists planning another type of 9/11 attack. And it revolves around this 9/11, the 10th anniversary. And so that's where the story goes on. You get to meet a lot of his staff, a lot of people that he grew up with, his brother-in-law, who I actually based that loosely on my own brother-in-law, who I lost years ago. And that's really where the story jumps on. It becomes a story of stopping terrorists from performing another attack on the United States.
Yeah, I know it's coming up on 10 years, and I think about that, and I'm saying that we better stay on the alert. And then I think
it's awful. It's you know, when you do thrillers, you have to do a lot of research. And when I started researching The Watchmen, it actually started troubling me. I mean, first of all, government does a great job, and I've gotten a lot of mail from the government because this. Remember, The Watchmen is one of the few books that you're going to read that's in the political thriller genre. That's not based on a CIA agent or a Navy SEAL, although they're parts of it. You know, De Niro is really a guy from Brooklyn. He's really a guy that suffered a loss, and I really want to write stories from that, from the normal folks, you know, from the normal type of people.
Right,
well, that's why I really
people
like
relate
it.
To that. Yeah, people relate to it, right.
That's why I really
there
liked
was a lot
it,
of there was a lot of a bad feeling. I don't have to. Fran will tell you that. You know, I lost 15 friends in the tower, and my wife and I, it seemed like all we did was go to funerals, and there was a lot. I mean, the sadness is there, but there's also a lot of anger, a lot of frustration, a lot of helplessness, feeling of helplessness. And I wanted to write a character that can kind of stick up for all of us and do the things that we can't do.
I don't blame you. I was in school that day. And the nurse, I was just about to start my first writing class because I was the writing staff developer. And the nurse said to me, she says, you got to see this. And I watched the second tower come down, and I could not believe I was watching something that was really happening. It was horrible seeing those people coming out of the windows and running in the streets. It was horrible.
Absolutely awful.
It was horrible. Chris really loses a lot, and he is really crushed after Lisa, and he had a problem dealing with his daily life. So how did his sons and his family deal with the fact that they lost their mother too?
Well, he has two sons in it, Richard and Lewis, and the older son reacts a little differently than the younger son, and I really based that off of my personal experience with my friends who lost their spouses on 9/11. The younger children, because they didn't have the relationship with the parent that they lost, they didn't have that closeness that the older children did. The older children, obviously, you know, they reacted very badly. Some of the spouses move on and got remarried over the years, and you know, it was a little trying for the older kids that lost daddy or mommy in the tower. So. That's how I based those. I based his sons the same way, where the older character, the older child, Richard, is more possessive. You know, he's more protective of his dead mom, and you know, the younger child is more or less, hey, daddy, you know, move on. Whereas De Niro can't move on because De Niro is still devoted to his wife, so he doesn't. You know, 10 years later, he's still not able to really push forward into a new relationship.
I have another question. I have lots more questions.
Yeah.
I was asked to write something for the preface of a book on 9/11. It was called American Myth Music after 9/11. And the question that I was asked was, what impact do you think that 9/11 have on New Yorkers? And I was asked to write this preface actually from that point of view. So what impact do you think that 9/11 had and your book would have on most New Yorkers?
I could tell you, Fran, especially because I travel a lot in my past life and stuff. The effect of 9/11 is much different in New York than outside of New York. And I'm all the way out west now, and I'm not saying that Americans generally they're not crushed by it, but there's a certain personal nature to they attacked our home. And, you know, coming from New York, we're very territorial. I'm a guy born and raised in Brooklyn. Our neighborhood, our block, our community, very, very territorial people. You know, we really care for our city. And you know, and it was attacked. I mean, other than the terrorists, the Muslim aspect of it and this and that, really what it was was an attack on our community, on our homes. And so the New York is a completely different reaction, intensity level reaction than the rest of the country. You know, when I tell people out here about the Watchmen of Ephraim, they're reading it almost like it's an adventure. To them, it's almost like an adventure book, that second chapter. Wow, is that real? You know, that's not the same. As a matter of fact, there's been a couple of reviews that said, gee, love the idea of the book. I lost people in the tower, can't review it. So it shows you how, and look at with Fran, you know, there are people in New York that know people that died in the tower. So it's a completely different experience for New York.
They couldn't review the book. That's amazing.
I just got one yesterday, and I completely understand. I wrote part of the reason why I wrote The Watchmen is so that I can deal with my own feelings of helplessness, because I was with my friend Danny Aflito's wife, the moment he was still on the phone after the plane hit the tower, and
said,
I was there for his last words. So it's something that I haven't really gotten over, and it's been 10 years.
See, I think, you know, and being from Chicago, I think, you know, I know we weren't there, but I can tell you, like, even when I was starting to read your book, I could feel, like, you know, chills, because it's such an event that people can't, I don't know, you can't forget this. I mean, this is something that is in all of our minds. That it's going with us. It's not, it doesn't, something like that doesn't leave. You know, something
yeah, I
that,
think. No, there's some defining times in the history
yes.
of our country.
Yes.
Certainly, like Pearl Harbor. Those were events that I remember my pop telling me. You know, it changed the world. I mean, the whole
yeah.
United States wanted to go to war. I think
Kennedy,
9/11 was
Kennedy.
That kind of thing.
Yeah, and the Kennedys. Yeah. These are things that stay with you, and there's never enough about, because everybody needs to know about these things and. And you have to feel that it was such a horrible thing in your soul when you're, you know, just thinking about it. So I think that's from somebody here. But I know watching it here, I mean, it was horrible, you know, and it's certainly for people in New York. I mean, there's no doubt. That's why if they're not reviewing it, they just can't, you know, and you understand, which is very nice of you to understand.
You know, when I wrote the site, it's really most of the book, the majority of the book takes place now because it moves 10 years into the future. So the book actually starts off the first two chapters on the day, at the moment, 15 minutes mm-hmm. before the planes hit, and the second chapter deals with the actual calamity, the attack right there. When I wrote that, I had a feeling that the book could actually stand as a historical document as far, because I was reenacting this situation, so I really wanted to get it right, and I actually spent the most amount of time on the research. I watched that there was two French brothers that actually were there when it is a great documentary that's out that you can find, and these two guys were there, and so I relived this thing for like 2 months, and that's how I wrote that second chapter.
Yeah, I could tell, because you could actually see it. I could close my eyes and see what was happening. And that's why I could review the book. And I knew what it was about, and I said, you know what, this would be a great thing for everybody to want to read and to understand that this really didn't happen. It could happen again. And I've read a few other books based on 9/11 also recently. Not quite as good as yours, but yeah, it was... You know, when it's about an FBI agent or a CIA agent, it's one thing. But when it happens to a real person, it makes the book even more real.
Right.
That's why it was
that's
so compelling.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
Now, you have a bad guy in here that I didn't like, and I won't tell anybody the ending. Did you model Arif Zamani after anyone in particular?
Probably not any specific person, but after reading about the people that hate our country, I try to put a combination of elements, and again, I wanted to tie in some of the, I guess, the less glamorous sides. Whereas with terrorists, we always see the fellas, you know, carrying the guns and this and that. Well, there are people that are putting the money up for that, and coming from the financial industry, again, I was in contact with some of these people. And so I wanted there to be a character that was behind, and to kind of give people the idea that, you know, it's more than just guns and bullets. There are people that have the same ideologies, the same hate feelings for our country, but they're working behind the scenes, and they're the guys that are educated. Many of them are educated here. And they mm-hmm. they have an ideology, and they have money, and that's the dangerous thing. And Arif Zamani is an Iranian businessman. He's actually, you know, comes from the same kind of place that Chris De Niro does. He made his money in some of the same kind of ways, you know, with hedge funds and private equity companies. So that's where he came from. And then we had there's an element of the border crisis, which I think is the new war here. I mean, there's been it's a situation that that people that hate our country are using. They're using right now to get into our country.
I know. I was talking to someone 2 weeks ago that works for the Fulbright Scholarship, and that's exactly what we were discussing, is the fact that there are 1,800 Americans or something that get to from other countries that come here, and that our kids go there, and the kids from foreign countries actually get educated in our universities, and they get these scholarships. And then I begin to wonder, and they were telling me where they were from, Iran, Pakistan, Iraq, and Afghanistan, and all over. And then they go back and work in their countries, and they're getting the education here. So you mentioned a border control group in your book called the Shadow Wolves. Do they really exist?
Yes, the Shadow Wolves are very interesting. I found out about the Shadow Wolves from the research of the book. I was trying to find out about ICE agents and Border Patrol agents and Homeland Security. And I came across, because the book takes place right near Nogales, Arizona, there is a Native American reservation, the Tohono O'odham Nation. I did not realize it's a reservation literally the size of the state of Connecticut. And it sits on our border. It actually crosses over into Mexico. And this Shadow Wolf unit is a Native American unit. They're composed of Native Americans who use their old-style traditional Native American tracking techniques to find and track the illegals that come across into their reservation. I thought it was extraordinary. As a matter of fact, I think somebody's writing a book about it now. That's just going to feature them, and there was a 60 Minutes article on it and this and that. But I just thought it fascinated me so much I had to put them into the book.
But isn't it great when you do all this research? When you do this research, you learn things that you never thought you'd ever, you know, you just learn things. Research is, that's what happens. A lot of times people don't research enough. And when you research, you find out all this information that you never really knew existed.
And you know what? Guys like Tom Clancy, I think were the ones that tied me to that kind of research. Where I used to, you know, when you read a Clancy novel, I used to feel like the first six chapters I went to college because he taught me so much about what I used to get confused. Still to this day, I get confused with Tom Clancy novels because I think they're real. When you write a thriller, I think if you can get it where a person comes by and says that was real, right? I think you've reached the top. You know?
Oh, that's right. Oh, that's absolutely right.
Well, that was my next question, by the way.
Uh-oh.
How about that? That was number 19 here.
Uh-oh.
I actually must
notes.
Be thinking on the right wavelength, and maybe I need to stay up past my bedtime more often. But this book reminds me, I read Clancy, okay? And I read Dead or Alive, and it was okay, his last one. I think his other ones with the real Jack Ryan were a whole lot better. This one reminds me of Rainbow Six, which I thought was one of his better books. And if you read Jack Higgins, his Basement, the two groups working under the radar like the Watchmen did. So how does this group differ, and what skills do they have that most, you know, organizations like this, you know, anti-terrorist organizations wouldn't? And how did Chris get all this security in place so that his family would be safe?
Well, the agent is a counterterrorism agency, so they're basically a civilian third-party agency, not part of the government. Again, I wanted to stay away from that. I think that there's so many great authors that are really covering that, the Brad Thors and just so many of these other great authors that write from within the community itself, the law enforcement and the terrorism, counterterrorism. So what I did is I had De Niro buy a lackluster one. This is one that wasn't performing very well. He picks it up, and now he's going to move people around and staff them differently. And I try to bring to life characters that I identify with and that I know. I know those type of people. And so the Watchmen agency is basically built on people that – in other words, I like organizations that you get promoted – for merit. And so, you know, I've dealt so many years with the federal government. One of the problems with the federal government and the seniority-based stuff is sometimes you don't have the best at the top. I wanted the Watchmen to float people up to the top. But the other thing that I did, that I hope I did right, is I met a lot more women in all sorts of organizations that rise to the top, and I didn't see them as portrayed the same way in thrillers. I think Brad Thor did a great thing with the Athena project, but I wanted to do that too. So I have Michelle Wang, and I have more than one what I consider strong female character in the book, and so my wife was glad to you know, that I did.
Yeah, we like that. No, it's very good. Right.
Not only that, you know, they don't mess up, which is even better. Because a lot of the books that I've been reading lately, you know, the female characters are there, and in one or two of them, they started out strong and they wind up, you know, behind the eight ball. And I said, well, you know, she could have really been a little bit stronger, or she could have said this and stood up for herself against those guys.
And Clancy goes back to, is a throwback to like the 80s, and I remember the one thing that I did, I got to tell you, the one thing that I really don't, now everybody to each their his own, but I'm not one of the guys that likes happily married guys that in a fit of time they have an argument with their wife and right away they're having an adulterous affair with somebody in their agency or whatever. And, you know, I get to those parts in some of these thrillers and I'm saying, you got to have faults. Lord knows I have tons of faults, but one of them is not committing adultery.
Right.
So I wanted, if you notice, I try to bring out relationships, romantic relationships, and other things that are going to be unfolding right into the sequels. But I just wanted to stay away from there. You know, not every single woman that works is going to be sleeping with the boss.
Right. Exactly. That's good.
So I got a little bit of slack for that. Somebody wrote in and said, you know, your book is not believable. Everybody's too goody two shoes, and I'm thinking, I'm from Bedford Stuyvesant. I mean, goody two shoes. Chris De Niro. I don't particularly picture my characters as goody two shoes. So.
No, he's definitely not a goody two-shoes, and I come from the South Bronx, so don't even go there, people. You've got a tough guy from Brooklyn, and an even tougher one from the South Bronx, so you don't even go there. And I think I have to say this, you know, to countermand their comments, is the reason why I like the book is because it didn't have all that stuff in it. I find that when I review a book and there are too many explicit scenes, I skip over those parts and get to the plot if I can find one.
Well, it's certainly a book like this.
That's
certainly in a book like this, you're expecting a good right. You're looking for the information that's not, you know, that's not about sex. And you know, the other thing is, like, we're having Tess Garrison on next week. We've had her before, and she writes very strong woman characters, and that's a really good. I mean, as a woman, we like that when, you know, they're strong and not just running into bed with everybody to get where they get, you know. And she has that series with Zoli and Isles, so they're very strong characters.
To show you how naive I am, I started tracking the followers just specifically for the book, and you know, I figured, oh, okay, it's a geopolitical thriller or whatever. I'm probably going to have 9.5 out of 10 people are going to be men. Completely the opposite. Right now, I'm probably about 55-45 men to women. But when I first started out of the box, it was the women. And I'll tell you something else that I really love is that the ending. You know, you don't want to give away the ending of the story, but it ends pretty violently, and it ends. Let's just put it this way: it ends very violently. So I figured, okay, whatever that 0.5 woman that I was going to have, I'm going to probably turn her off with what happens at the end. Well, I got 100 letters in the first week from women that said, I am so glad that happened at the end. So I guess let's just put it this way. I'm pleased to know that, you know, that I probably did the, you know, something right with the book, and it appealed to the female readers, you know.
There's a ton of female readers. I mean, you know, and it is a great
more than men.
And it's great when you get
the
a male
would
audience.
Have been disappointed. The ending would have been disappointing if you didn't end it that way. I think if you and the way you ended it was quite unique. I won't say how, but it was quite different. It was quite different.
You know what? That was for everybody that lost somebody in the town.
Yeah.
That came right from my heart, if you, like you're from the Bronx or Chicago or you know, if you're from an inner city, you know that we take care of our own, and you know. Honestly, that you know, people, a few people out here were like, "Would you really do something like that in New York?" And I said, "You have no idea."
Because in Chicago, if you meet someone and you know, and they're not from Chicago, and you are, they think like it's Al Capone. They think you have a gun. You know, I mean, it's just
that's
people
right.
Think that, yeah, I mean, it's just you're in Vegas now, but you know, this is what people think of people in Chicago or New York. We are tough. I mean, you have to be if you live in the Chicago, or you know, you have to be in the city. It's different. It's a whole
That's
different
right.
world.
That's right, and we would take we tend to take care of things, especially something personal. If there's a personal attack on a family, this and that, I mean, in my neighborhood, you're gonna forget about the police or the FBI or the CIA or wherever else. You're gonna deal with us, and that's what I wanted to bring out. I think you're gonna find that in anything that I write, my upbringing comes out because it's a you know, very strong part of my life.
Yeah, that was my father taught me that. He said, you know, you got to take care of what you want to take care of, and you don't sit and dwell about it. And if you're going to worry about it, what's the point? And if you can do something about it, fix it, which is very true. And my mother's, you know, mantra was, if somebody in the family needs you to do something or are in trouble and you have 1,000 things to do, kindly stop and do what you know and help them.
Yeah.
So, you know, families have to stick together in New York. As
I think you're right.
True.
Exactly.
Yeah,
family
I
do. Think they
so should. Let's change the vein a little bit. So, how does your family feel about you writing this book?
Well, you know, it was kind of a crazy situation when I wanted to deliver a very personal, you know, storytelling because of the, you know, it's 9/11 and I wanted to do it justice. I wanted to do the topic justice in the incident. The only way I felt that I could do it, you know, you hear about, you know, actors that drop themselves into the role. I wanted to drop myself into the role. So I actually used names and people that are, you know, that are personal to me and my family and my friends. One of the names I used is Lisa, and Lisa is Chris's wife, but Lisa happens to be my wife.
Your wife, right.
It was a little bit of a problem at Little League because I had people throwing their arms around me saying, gee, I just heard, I'm so sorry, I'm thinking...
Well, Lisa, oh my God.
What are you, you know, you're sorry about what? And, you know, and we have four sons, so we're never at the same Little League game, and I'd hear, you know, she's gone, and this, I'm thinking, what are you talking about?
I know.
But I didn't tell my wife. You asked me how my family was. I didn't tell my wife, and my wife is one of the editors on the book. And so I didn't allow her to know what she was editing, and she reads it, and she, you know, I got a phone call saying, you killed me off in the second chapter. And so that was kind of one thing. The other thing is my two older sons read it, and they cried when they read Mommy died, and I had to go through an explanation that that's not Mommy. It's Chris De Niro's wife, so... you know, but it's a personal thing. You know what? I think I did the right thing. If my own son read it and felt that kind of emotion, that was the kind of emotion that I think does justice to that situation.
Do you think kids would read this book? I mean, my 16-year-old nephew reads almost anything. So, do you think that this book is right for, you know, older teens to read?
That's a good question. I think that would be up to the child. I know that as a 11 or 12 year old, I was reading Jack London. Whether I would have read The Watchmen of Ephraim, I'm not sure. You know what? When I first started writing, the original thing I wanted to write were children's books. I wanted to write books when my son was born that showed righteous, you know, Christian, Judeo-Christian heroes. And I ended up not having the talent for it. I don't know. Every time I wrote something, it started sounding like Tom Clancy does Dr. Seuss. So it didn't work out for me
very well. Doing, and you have the passion, which I had talked to Fran and I mentioned to you before. I mean, what I feel is, you know, something that really strong is that because there's so many people writing now, but not everybody has true feeling about, and so when you read a book and when you look at your website and when you talk to a person like it, you know you have the passion to write. So you know you're doing the right thing because most people these days I find that are just writing, they're just writing, but they're not writing with a passion. And they might be thinking of money more than anything else. And it's clear that when you're talking, this is passion in your heart and you wanted this book to be that way. And that's why it's so nice to hear somebody really caring about how they're writing. You know, I think
I appreciate that. And honestly, this was not a... you know, for me personally, this was not a step in the right direction financially. Lord knows, I have a great family. I have my wife who just turned around and said, "You need to write these stories down."
We definitely understand that. You know, if you're coming into this field and thinking you're going to make $1 million, it doesn't all work that way. But if you're coming in to write a good story, there is room for a good story. You know, and that's that's what we do here. And that's one of the things. I am so happy to see somebody that cares that much about what they're writing. Makes me feel happy because I'm an agent who most people, which you have written in one of your blogs, that most people do quit. They do. They don't keep going.
Yeah, well, you know, that's another thing from the upbringing. You know, if you come from Chicago and New York and stuff, we don't give up very easily. I mean, you know, things are not easy. There's 8-9 million people in New York. If you're gonna get anywhere in life, you're gonna have to be able to deal with rejections, which that's all writing is about. If you're a new author, I don't have to tell you, you're gonna deal with a lot of rejections. But I absolutely believe in everything I write. So and I only try to please myself. I figure if you know there's another person out there that likes to read the same kind of books and characters and stories that I do, fantastic, because that's the only person that I ultimately am trying to please. I'm trying to write something that I feel, I would want to read, and The Watchmen is like that, and anything that I would read.
That's a good way to do it. I mean, because Fran, you know, she reads a lot of books, and she calls me and she says, you know, this book is a great book. She and I trust her judgment because she is reading a lot of books, and, you know, this is a really, you know, I mean, I don't know if you do want to talk about anything about the fact of when you were, you know, trying to get published and what happened or anything like that or...
Sure.
You self-published, right?
I self-published. That's right. I originally wrote a manuscript before this, a year before The Watchmen came out, and I shopped it, and I went out to the agents and stuff, and there was a couple of mistakes that I made with that. First of all, personally, I made a mistake of mixing genres. Again, I seem to be a natural thriller type writer because I love thrillers, and I was trying to write an adventure story, and it came out a mishmash of thriller and adventure, and those are two very, very separate genres in my estimation. Although I got traction with it, I got agents that were interested, and I had a couple of smaller publishing houses that were interested in it. But the bottom line is, I didn't like the whole way these things were going to be done. I wanted the book to be out, for instance, I wanted the book to be out within the year, and I was finding out that even if I signed a publishing contract, the book wouldn't even be out for a year and a half.
Yeah,
they control
you.
They control when it goes down.
Bottom line, I looked for options. Thank God for the internet, and I spent lots and lots of hours in the middle of the night researching. Yeah. And I came across a great, great advocate of self-publishing. He's a tremendous author on his own. A guy named Dean Wesley Smith, and Dean changed my life. I read three of his blogs about destroying the stereotype.
What's his name? Dean
Wesley Smith. Is his name, and he's published untold amount of novels, 100, 200 novels. I mean, he's a prolific writer, he's been around a long time, and all he was really doing, for free, by the way, is he has his blog site, and he was putting out Destroying the Myths That Are in Publishing, and going out there and saying how you can self-publish nowadays and how to do it professionally. I'm telling you, after reading Dean's blogs, within 30 days, I had my own publishing company, and I had published my very first book.
That's why I think this is so wonderful. Yeah, he did.
You published it yourself. You created it yourself. You see, I made the mistake of using a self-publishing company, but after using them a few times, I got wise and I was able to make deals and get them to do a better job. But like we said at the beginning of the show, a lot of these self-publishing companies, you know, are publishing anything because they're not reading it.
It's very expensive, and it's not a good job.
And they don't read what you write, and they don't edit it. And even when you use the editing, that's where they fall down. And I've learned, you know, through six times of using the same people, which I won't do it again, how to make a deal, how to get them to fix things without having to pay for them and have them done over. Because once you sign for an approved galley, they'll tell you they charge you so much money per whatever to fix it, and it's not going to happen. I said, I will take the project away. And since you own the copyright, that's fine. So how did you set up your own publishing company? What does it entail?
Well, if anybody's listening out there, if they want to be writers, go to Dean Wesley Smith's. Just Google him, and he'll come right up. It's Dean Wesley Smith. And I can tell you, he did a step-by-step – explanation of how what you should do in order to put out a book. And the first step was to open up your own. He wants you to conduct yourself professionally, which means
like a business.
Stop
right,
being
a business.
The author and
right.
become the publisher. And that, and
right.
so I opened up, you know, you get yourself a DBA. It's very simple. You know, you get the checking account, you open up the DBA. But bottom line, it's really about, okay, stop thinking of yourself as the author now. If you have the book and the book is ready to get out there and you want to publish it, it's time, and you're going to self-publish it, you have to act as a publisher. So you have to act more like a business person, a professional. And this is really something that appealed to me, because I've always been an entrepreneur, and I says, okay, now this stuff kind of makes sense to me, as opposed to mm-hmm. I got to wait a year and a half, and I just none of that seemed to be to make any sense to me. So you start your publisher. The other thing Fran was touching on it just now. If you don't have the specific skill sets to make a quality product, there are more than enough people that you can hire for a fee.
Right.
And I think
mm-hmm.
Dean's biggest thing that he tries to tell people is giving away 15% of yourself to anybody nowadays without reading your contract and not losing all control is not something you should really do unless that's
right.
really what you want to do. I mean, if it's a big six publishing house, fine, great. But for the rest of us, you know, be careful what you sign. Be careful
right.
the rights that you give away. It's much better to pay people. You know,
I know
pay
exactly
somebody
what
to
said.
Do your
what,
cover or
right.
your editing or anything else.
He's absolutely right.
Would you publish for other? Would you publish anybody else's books under your publishing company?
I've actually been given few people sent into Jerry Journal Publishing. It's named after my four sons, Jared, Ryan, Jordan, and Noah. I open up the thing, I put out the website, and all of a sudden I started getting books in there and saying, "Listen, would you take on my book?" And I showed my wife, and my wife said, you know, why don't you do it? You do a quality product, G. I mean, you know, and Lord knows,
no,
I'm married to my biggest critic, so it can't get any harder than my wife, Lisa.
Honestly, because, you know, Fran and I had talked about this many times, and I am a big advocate of self-publishing. I mean, I've been an agent for years. I really can't help people. I can't help them anymore because they're not paying attention to any of the new writers. They've missed a ton of wonderful writers. When I've been doing this for like 15, 16 years as an agent, and I wrote my own books, you know, and I have several. I have a Holocaust survivor. I have children's books. I write screenplays, and I truly believe in self-publishing because I really feel that people that are very good writers are giving up something way too fast. And with now, it's so much easier. And now because there's Blog Talk Radio, there's the Internet, there's ways people can get out there that they never could before. I on your website, when you have your blog, do you want to just talk about that for a minute? Because it's really very informative, the people that have written in. So do you want to talk about that just for a few seconds? Because it's really what you've done is you've created a wonderful book that looks good, and it is good, okay? And that's important. Your product turned out the exact same way that any traditional publisher would have published it. So this is not like when you say self-publishing, people go, oh, they think you like glued it together. That's not true. This is a book that looks, there's no difference. Just the name on it.
It's funny, but you say that, and I really appreciate that, and it's, when you go out there and you tell somebody and they say, who's published you? You know, who put you out?
Yep.
And you say, you know, I'm self-published. You get the eyes rolling. And you know what? I can't blame anybody for that. It's the Wild West out there.
Mm-hmm.
So
yep,
you're going to get quality all over the spectrum.
That's a great way to put it.
You don't
West.
Get that with a big six. I mean, if you get a book from a big publisher, it's going to be good quality. You may not like the writer, or you may not like the story, but they don't turn out subpar.
Right. It looks good.
Right. And so, really, I put out a blog because I wanted to pay it forward. I told Dean, his wife is a prolific writer also, Christine Rush, and she writes a great blog. So there's a lot of information out there. If you want to, you want to do it right. You want to self-publish and you want to do it right. You can go to my website or you can go to their website. I put out a blog called Self Pubbers Pub, and it's just basically written from the perspective of a student of these very, very talented people who were nice enough to, for free to put out all this information and say, listen, if you want, now one thing about Dean, he's a taskmaster. He doesn't forgive people for being lazy. He thinks that too many writers are lazy. And you know what? I was a rock musician. I can tell you, musicians are generally lazy people. So all you musicians out there, you're laughing now because you know I'm right. Okay? We like to wake up at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, get our, you know, get a shower, and we're gonna perform for, you know, 90 minutes, and that's our day. So, you know, writers had this feeling, I thought, a couple of years ago, where they thought, I'm just gonna write it and people are gonna come to it. And you know, the big publishers can't even do that anymore. They expect new authors to market and everything else. When you self-publish, you've got to go one step further, and you're going to create it.
Well, I'll tell you one thing. I've read like 400 books in the last 2 years. Just about, maybe more.
A year and a half.
And I can tell you now, there's a difference, like you said, in the quality. All too often, even in regular published books by Big Sixes, traditionals, I open up the book, and sometimes the pages fall out.
Mm-hmm.
And
oh, yeah.
Which is really, they do.
Yeah.
Sometimes there's a lot of editing problems in a traditional published book. And I said, in yours, at least, it's really great. And I said, I went to open it so that I could, you know, open it to the middle, and the pages didn't fall out. I mean, it sounds weird, but a lot of the self-published books, there was one that I read that literally fell apart in my hand. That it was insane.
Yeah, I mean, I know exactly what you're talking about.
But
yeah, you know what?
It's the way it is now. And, you know, but Fran, I said to Fran, I said, this is a self-published book because this is my specialty, because this is really...
It doesn't
look like
a self-published book.
No, right.
That's
and I
thing.
Am such... I'm like, you know, I do get myself out there because I just believe so much in people writing that I look and, you know, check everything out and see. But a lot of people, they didn't do what you did, because you're right. This takes so much work. But it's worth it in the end, I think.
Ladies, and this is for everybody else out there, consider this. I did not know any of this prior to January of this year. So anything that you see in that book, and I appreciate the kind words because I did work hard on it, but it's not like I knew what I was doing until I followed some of the directions of some of these kind folks. For instance, I got the InDesign program, and I found out that InDesign is a program that most of the big publishing houses use. So if you're using, you know, if you use, and you don't have to use InDesign, I'm not promoting that per se. All I'm saying is that if you use a quality application and you follow the directions and again, not everybody, I have an IT degree, so maybe I had a couple of legs up on people as far as, you know, using a program. But you don't have to. I think the biggest point about self-publishing is act like a publisher. If you were not a writer and you were, in the business of publishing books for profit, what you would do is you would hire on people to do some of the jobs that you can't do, and that's what you can do nowadays.
That's right, exactly. I myself have done the same thing. Michigan Avenue Media LLC is my company, and I am publishing my own books from now on because I've learned different things. And you're right, you have to pick out the cover, you pick out everything, and you do everything, and you are a publisher. And that's really great advice to say that, yes, look at yourself not as the author. You can't, because then you're going to, you know, because you have to be able to cut where you need to cut and to take out things, and it, you know, because editing to me, I am not an editor. And I've mentioned this on almost every show I do. Editing is the most important. If you do not have your book edited, do not do a book. Because if you don't have it edited, it looks like somebody threw it together.
Absolutely, 100% endorse that. That is, it's so funny. I had three editors on this book because I'm a little anal about those kind of things too. And, I'm trying to do it myself and get it out there. And can you believe my 12-year-old son uses my book as a book report, and he comes in and he finds 14 typos. Mm. Now, small typos in an 86,000-word book, you know, regardless of how you feel, to me, I have a zero tolerance for anything. What I couldn't believe is that it got past three of us. And so I absolutely agree. Editing
is not
the key.
It's not unusual.
I've read books that have had an awful lot of typos and an awful lot of grammar mistakes. I think the thing that aggravated me the most is when I wrote my first children's book, and I had someone edit it, and it was perfect. When I gave it to the publishing company, I said, okay, these are the mistakes. I fixed everything, and you need to make a galley without the mistakes. When I got the author's copy, the mistakes were still there. I fixed it again and went through this back and forth, and you learn the first time from your mistakes.
Yeah.
When the book came out, I was mortified because the book had no typos in it. My sister edited. My sister was amazing at editing things. When she got the book, she said, I don't know how to tell you this, but you've got about 50 typos and grammar mistakes in a children's book that shouldn't be there. I took it off sale. I went completely ballistic on these people, and I took it off sale. The head of the publishing company read the book himself, said he corrected it, put the book out again, and I can tell you now there's still some typos in the book that, you know, most people don't realize, but I know they're there, and it mortifies
right.
me. It absolutely kills me.
People may think that, you know, I don't know what people are thinking, to tell you the truth, but, you know, you would think, oh,
well,
how can you have typos?
Right, you've come to the right place. You're here.
It happens. I'm absolutely embarrassed about it. And, you know, when you're a self-publisher now, I have nobody else to look at. The buck stops with me. I'm the editor. Let's put it this way. I'm not the editor. I'm the publisher. So I'm ultimately responsible, and I want to put out books that, and this has become my cause that I've been championing, which is quality standard for, we need to establish quality standard in self-publishing.
Right.
We absolutely need it. It's for the good of the folks, not for the writers. It's going to be a pain for the writers, but I just think that when the average person goes out and gets a self-published book, it should match a traditionally published book. And no excuses.
The average person doesn't know, though. They don't know. They really don't know. When they don't know, there's so many different publishers now. The average person, that's why people with a good story can get out there, because they don't care if you're from the big six or whatever. They don't, you know, they just want the story. And that's right. You're absolutely right. Because let's just have it where people that are self-publishing, which are trying to be out there, and let's make it a something where it matters. And because, you know, I really don't like the fact where they'll go, like, we will review your book only if it is published traditionally.
Yep.
And that really, I get crazy. It's horrible.
That's the deal. The Journal of Library Review won't review your book unless it's a traditional publisher. So if anybody's listening out there and you own a bookstore, I think you should make one just for self-published authors.
And I think they should just allow it.
I think it's happening now. They've got some great self-published authors out there that like Conrath and Eisler was there for a while. Now they're cutting deals with Amazon's new imprint.
These are really the
founding fathers, the founding brothers and sisters of self-publishing. They're showing us all that it can be done, and they're selling hundreds of thousands of copies of their books.
I'm thrilled. I love it. I'm so happy. And, you know, honestly, this has changed so many people's lives, and really, I mean, but it does take a lot of work, but it's worth it. I mean, you know, and it's, you know, what most people don't understand is years ago, you really couldn't get anywhere. Now, you really can't have a career. You can make your own career and get out there, but you can't let the fact of rejections or all these other things get in your way. You have to work at it and get it. I mean, and when I read your site today, I'm going, yes, I'm going, like, thank God somebody's writing this, really, other than, you know, I keep saying it a lot, and people are listening, but the fact is, Fran, we talk about it, and we all know the fact that we are being treated not in the same way, and that is so unfair.
Well, you two ladies are actually giving us, a self-published author like myself, you're giving me the ability to even get out there and to get publicity. And so,
but I
you,
am you, and
you,
so
you
it's
ladies
the
are doing a great service for people. Now it's up
Thank
to the authors to start turning out quality products,
right,
and doing it consistently, and you know,
it's happening, and it's.
Hey, listen,
right,
my book is distributed. When it gets put on paper, it's put out by Ingram. So
yes.
the
right,
fact of the
ours.
Matter
mine
is, you know,
it's not
the printer's fault if you write. You know, all the, you know, even me. I mean, I'm on the third edition on the book because I want the book to be spotless. And like Fran says, it's just, you know, it bothers me, and now I gain a respect for the big publishing houses. You know, they all self-publishers want to make them the enemy, and I can tell you what, you shouldn't make them the enemy. You should make them the objective. You should be able, if you can, if I could put out books that look like Tom Clancy's and W.E.B. Griffin's and all the big authors out there, then I've done a great job. I mean, that's
your
our aim.
Great. You know, see, I look at it like Fran, I told her, I look at it, I'm looking at the book. And I look at the book and I go, this is a good book. This looks right. And you are doing that already, and so are a lot of other people. And I hope they're listening and taking your advice, because your advice to say get it done right is the most important thing. And don't let all these typos go. Just fix it. You know, get it
done
right.
I'll say it here like I say it on my website. If anybody wants any help, they can always come to my website, send me an email. I found that this community, the self-publishing community, is some of the nicest folks I've ever met.
Mm-hmm.
I can't even distinguish between the guys that have been out there with 200 novels and the people that just started, because everybody is very friendly and very helpful. It's a great time to be in publishing right now. And,
yeah,
and you ladies
are
with the radio show, I think you're on top of a tidal wave of new and great stuff.
Like, I feel like I'm so happy that people are actually doing this. I mean, and Fran, we talk about this, because not only when we're on a show together, because she does her show, I do mine, but we talk about it a lot. And we just really hope that it does change, because it's been so unfair to people. I mean, it really has. And, you know, you're saying the right things, because you're saying some of these books, they shouldn't be published. You're absolutely right. And on your website, mm-hmm. everything that you have said really is, and Fran definitely knows, because she reads books constantly. I mean, like every week she's reading like 10 books, you know.
400
I mean,
books. Fran would be the, Fran should be just the person that, she should just be like the Alexa Hente of books. You should send your book and then the drum roll should go, and Fran Lewis should just stick her thumb up or down.
You know what, I'm beginning to think that, but you know what, I interviewed Steve Berry last week, and I have to tell you, he's an amazing man. And he said, we were talking about typos in books, and he said, you cannot find a book, even in traditional published book, that doesn't have a few typos in it. And he said, and I told him, I said, I've read quite a number of books, you know, by regular, you know, top authors that have had typos in them, and I just ignore them. And when I review a book, I skip over that part and then go to the plot, and I'll go to the, you know, the characters, and then I won't review it, and I will never tell an author that they have typos in their book, because I figure some editor made a mistake and it's, you know, they didn't quite catch it. Because most of the, you know, traditional published books are edited by like 10,000 people, and if they make the mistake, and in the back of Stuart Wood's book, he'll say, if you found a typo, tell my editor, because she missed it, I didn't.
That's a great idea.
Yeah, what I did with my first children's book is, when I got my first review, somebody said to me, I'm going to give you 5 stars, but do you have typos? I said, please blame it on Bertha. She's only 10. I'm so sorry. I don't think I would have the wherewithal and the energy to read all the books I have to read, write the books, and publish them. So someone's going to have to do my next book as soon as I come out. I have 3 projects. So as soon as I get my Bertha stories done, someone's going to have to do me the favor of publishing the book and editing it, because Fran doesn't do stuff like that. She's just, you know, has to read other books.
Seems to be a lot of editors out there. Instead of, you know, trying to watch the pennies, I turned to some fellow authors that had been editing, you know, were editors also, but they were also authors, and they were kind enough. The book, you know, The Watchmen went up to Canada, and I got a lesson on the use of ellipses, and so my friend Essam Carrario up there is, you know, she came through for me. But I tell you what, there's a lot to it, and you know, the fact is, though, it went through 3 editors, and a 12-year-old found 14 typos, and you know, it's just an and to an of was changed to an and or whatever. But bottom line, I think that all. If you're a publisher, if you're a self-publisher, zero tolerance should be our objective. This is a product that people are going to be buying, and you know, money is tight. And I appreciate the fact that the books that I read are, you know, are top quality. I'll tell you something else. My last thing I'll say on this is the fact that the e-reader, the books that are only put out for e-book, those authors really have to make sure they use the same quality that those of us that go to print, because you're missing that extra step. And when you go to that extra step, you actually catch a lot of stuff. When you go to paper, to print a paper, you catch a lot of stuff. And so, you know, I just hope that everybody, you know, takes
but
it seriously.
But the good news is they can re-edit it easier, though. That's a good thing, though, because they can fix an e-book quicker.
Yeah, but you know what that I'm concerned about is that people throw things. It reminds me of Microsoft. Remember back in the days when Bill Gates would come out with an operating system, kind of throw it out there, and then wait for all the feedback to fix the bugs. You know, but for the rest of us, we had these computers that you know had operating systems that didn't work for 6 months.
Right.
I really think that you get a little concerned with that, saying, you know what, I'm going to put it out there. If somebody writes in and says I have, mistakes, then I'll pull it back off because it's real easy. That's not the way a professional publisher should go about it.
The thing is, but what I was saying is, like, if you're reading your own book, let's say, and it's on there, and you see that it's a mistake, that can be rectified easier because you don't have to do
much
print
easier.
On it. Right.
And it doesn't cost, you know, Ingram, one thing about Ingram is if you make a mistake and you have to revise, you're getting hit with a $40 charge. And, you know, I don't blame them for that. As a lot, you know, the bottom line is you pay for mistakes when you publish the paper.
Right. And I am crazy like that. I like it a certain way. I have this book is called The Busy Bus, and now it's 99 cents it's on an ebook, and I'm going to talk about it on Saturday on one of the shows I'm doing. But the thing is that I found it was a word that was wrong. It was probably printed wrong, and nobody else caught it. And this has been out for a couple, you know, a year or so, and you know, people have read it, and I knew the word was wrong, but I had it. Finally, I just changed it because it was driving me crazy, even though it was a poem and it matched the last, but the word before it was wrong, so I had to have it. Now it's fixed. Now it's going to be fixed because it was just driving me crazy because I knew it was there, and nobody had seen it, but they probably didn't know that the word was the wrong word.
That's right.
But it
drove you crazy. It distracted you.
It drove me crazy. It was just one word, but, that's how we are, and that's why shows like this, I mean, that's why Fran does the show. We love doing these shows because actually it's now, you're right, because it's time that we get our word out there, and this way it is helping a lot of people because people are really selling books now that are self-published, independently published, and this is what makes this all worthwhile. I mean, I think it's great.
Oh, absolutely.
I am happy about this.
When is the next one coming out?
Next one's going to be out. It's called Signs of War. It's the sequel to The Watchmen. It'll be out in September. And then
Have you down for my show in December? One book till December, people. So I have down for
I can always do an extra show. You know, I do shows all the. You know, every. I sometimes do like 4 days.
I got to say, Fran and Marcia, you ladies are really did a great job for me personally because from the time that Fran even originally put out her, you actually put out two of them, and one of them was a pretty long review, and a lot
that
of people reacted
one,
to that. And
they reacted to it, and it's
very difficult for a new author to get a review. So
you know what was interesting? Remember when you were interviewing Steve Barry? There's one thing that he said that really stood in my head. What he said about reviews, and, you know, because you were talking about that, he said that a review is just an opinion and shouldn't get people so upset if they get a bad review. And I loved what he said, and it's in my head now because it's true. You know, don't stop writing because somebody said your book wasn't good. You know, that's bad. Just keep going, you know.
Refinement. To me, it's invaluable. And, again, remember, I came from the entertainment business, so... You know, to have somebody walk up to me and say that I really stink is, you know, it's kind of like my marriage, basically.
Yeah.
No, but really, when you're a musician, you can't please everybody all the time.
No,
so,
you can't.
But you can learn a lot from somebody that's got a, you know, Fran really delved into the book, and she got things back from the book that I learned from. I was like, wow.
Yeah.
You know, Fran noticed it, and that meant a lot to me. So it actually becomes inspiring.
I think it, yeah,
when
and
a book
I think
takes
really...
me a while to read it, yeah. Your book, I think I took actually a couple of days, because when it's a topic that really is, you know, that meaningful
right.
and that compelling, usually
right.
I can finish a book like yours in about an hour, maybe an hour and a half. But
yeah.
I said,
wow.
no, that wasn't going to happen. A, because it was for book pleasures, and the book and the review had to be perfect, because I won't tell you what happens when you leave a typo. That's beside the point. I won't even tell you about my little horror from last week that I accidentally left a typo and I was tired, and I wrote the review at 3:00 in the morning, and I should not have pressed send. And he was not happy, but I really, you know, did it over again. And thank goodness the author liked my review, and she's a news commentator for CBS, and she's going to do an interview with me.
Well, human people, you know.
I mean, but it happens. So when in September is this book coming out?
I'm going to try to have it out there in the first week of September, because
yeah.
the 10th anniversary for 9/11 is going to be a huge world event.
Yeah.
It's going to be a global
yeah.
event, and I'm getting some traction with the news and with, you know, different reviews. I'm going to be doing some book clubs, and I have this book tour. This blog tour that I'm doing now. It's a 70-day tour. Starts on 4th of July, goes to September 11th.
Wow.
And so I want to get Signs of War out there for September, so that people can see. One of the things that I like about series is whenever I got turned on to an author, if I read one book, I wanted to get into the next book. So,
yeah.
You know, I'm going to feel really good to have two books out there, and so that people that, you know, just get turned on to The Watchmen can go right into Signs of War.
I want to make sure that he says his website. I want you to say, because your website is so good, you want to give your
it's
website.
It's my name, so it's www.gerarddemarini.com. Spelling that name is going to be interesting. It's GerardDemarini.com.
Yeah, because this is a
great
website.
Normally, if you get close in Google, it'll bring you to my site.
Yeah. You got a lot of stuff on you, and that's why they'll find you. And really, I mean, because this is a really good website, and, you know, your blog really says a lot of things that people really need to see, because when you turn out a book like this and you have a blog like that, that will help a lot of people. And that's great. I mean, it's a wonder. It's really
I just want to pay it forward. My book came out because of the teaching and of some of these other people. And again, the thing that gets me is that the community does a lot of this stuff just gratis for free. And
yeah.
if it wasn't for me personally, for Dean Wesley Smith, I wouldn't even be talking to you ladies right now.
That's great though that it happened. You know, it's just and John. Do you know who John Kremer is? He was on one of our shows, and he was on a show with me, and he's a self-published writer, and he's everywhere. He's got so many things out there, and he tries to help people. And there are people out there, you're absolutely right, that are out there for people to really get this going for them. I mean, thank God we have people like that out there.
And I'll tell you something. You know, they have the International Thriller Writers Association. Great, great thing. You know, something that every thriller writer in the world wants to be able to take part in. And I sent in, you know, as a publisher, I sent in, to become a member. And they came back and said, sorry, you're self-published. You can be an associate member, which means I got to pay some bucks. And they have a huge conference. It's a great conference over in New York. And I was kind of disappointed that, you know, I didn't meet the criteria it's a good thing that we have a community with self-published authors that help each other, because, you know, right now we have a lot to prove to people, and so we got to kind of have to stick together.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. And, Fran, we talk about it all the time on all the shows, and the truth is, I think it is changing, like you said, but it really needs some help. It needs everybody to really stand up for each other and say, help us all here, because we are, you know, it's not fair to say that a book is self-published, you will not review it. Why don't you say that after you reviewed it and say, all right, this book is a bit, you know, but if it's a good book, don't miss out a good book. You know,
You're absolutely right. The only thing that embarrasses me is that I kind of feel the same way, and I'm not trying to say that my book is so much better than other people's. But
right.
When I put a summary out there, you know, I was reading in Smashwords, and you know, it's an ebook site where you can get your ebook formats,
right.
And I went up there and there was typos in the summaries, and I'm thinking, I was going to start sending emails to these different authors and say, hey, fix your summary there, because you embarrass the whole community if you.
But see, sometimes it's not really always their fault. You know what? If they're getting it self-published, see, a lot of the self-publishers are putting it on for people for Smashwords. It's not.
You know what? That's right too.
It's not their fault. And you know, and like you can't even add reviews from Amazon. You can't unless you buy the book, you know, or whatever. And it's not always them. So see, that's the thing. It's really not. It's the publisher of the self-publisher that puts it on for them, and they make the mistake. But everybody.
Well, so, you know what? Then I should be writing a letter to those people, because we're under such a spotlight and a microscope. We have to be better than TradPub in some ways than traditional publishing, because their stuff is really really good quality, and so we gotta get to that point. And there's no reason why you can't.
There is a lot, because Fran will say, Fran, you've read a lot of books that are good.
I've read traditional published books. I have publishing companies that who have me on their list to send books to. I never know when Random House or Doubleday or anyone is going to send me books. And I have like Bascom and a whole bunch of other publishing companies, and they just happen to show up, a publicist that have said to me, Elliot Patterson's book came last week. He sent it to me himself, Ashes of the Earth. And he sent me a second book because he liked my interview, and he's a traditionally published author. You never know. But I have to tell you that a lot of the self-published books that I've read are better than a lot of the books on the New York Times bestseller list.
Yeah.
And I'm saying it, and I'm not just saying it to say it. It's a fact. And I mean, I read a book by Irma Fritz, Irretrievably Broken, about the Holocaust, and I wish Irma would write another book. Was probably one of the best books I've ever read. And then I've read books by New York Times bestselling authors, and I won't say who, whose books I read a half of and said, thank God I don't have to review this. It's horrible.
That's actually interesting to me and great to hear, especially since Fran reads so many
books.
It is.
She's right, because she has read a lot of them, and the truth is, but sometimes if there is one or two, you know, mistakes in it, you know, I'm very lenient in that way. I really am. I'm looking at the story a lot of times and everything, but I for myself, that's another story. Then I get crazy when it's my own writing, you know. But when it's somebody else's, you just, you know, because when I read scripts, I realize, you know, I'm looking for the story. I'm not looking for the typos in a script, even though a screenplay needs to have no typos either. And, you know, but the thing is that we are all doing so much now. And at so many hours, we're all up doing things, that this is why a lot of this does happen. Everybody's tired, but we'll keep going, because this does.
And I also want to make the point that we're not talking about censorship. I'm not talking about your style or your prose or whatever. I'm talking about the craft. All I'm talking about is you buy a book, like Fran says, you don't want it falling apart in your hands. You don't want to. There's no reason for a crappy cover nowadays. Even if you don't have any skill set, you can always find somebody that'll do something.
Yes, but there's a lot of people, but they have to. Yeah, you're right. There's a lot of people out there. You're absolutely right.
So if there's no excuse, just do a little bit extra work. I know it is tedious at times for writers. A lot of writers I talk to say, I don't want to do any of the other stuff. Okay, well then fine. If you want to be self-published, find somebody that'll do it for you. Pay them their fee. And you know, because the, you know, people don't work for nothing. The artists have to write, you know, the cover designers, if you're going to hire somebody, you're just like anybody else. If not, if you're going to do it yourself, just do it so that, just take another book. You know, if somebody asked me, how do you know when you've done it right? You don't have to be a college professor at this.
Right.
Take one of your favorite traditionally published books and hold it up next to your own proof.
Right.
If it's not, if you don't go, okay, then you know, honestly, go back to the drawing board or try to fix it. Try to get it a little closer. I mean, my cover doesn't matter. Some of the books I see out there by Brad Thor and Rollins and all, you know, they're fantastic.
That.
I mean, I just want to buy the book just for the cover. You know, I may not be able to do that, but at least I deliver
I think your book looks fine the way it is. You really don't have a problem with anything you did. This is a very good quality book, and it really is. So, I mean, you know, so you've done that right. So, but the thing is, I know what you're saying. You want people to do it. Like, if you're going to be self-published, let's do it right. Otherwise, don't do it. See, that's the thing. Don't, if you can't, if you can't imagine yourself having to do all this work, then don't, because you have to put a lot of work into it. You have to do a lot of PR. For 1.5 years, I have been doing PR, talking and whatever, and finally, after 16 years, people don't ask me, who am I and what do I do? I mean, because this is why you spend time talking to people. They go, like, what do you do? You know, it's not about the money. It's about the fact that I've kept people writing. And even if they're self-published, I don't make anything when they go to a self-publisher, but I at least know that they got their book out there, and it should be out there. So, and
you ladies should definitely be paid for you know, you can't pay for reviews. I'm not talking about reviews, but the fact that...
I did talk to that about reviewers, because the thing is, people don't want reviewers. I'm not a reviewer, but, you know, it's so much work. I mean,
no, I don't get paid to do this, ever.
Yeah, I know. That's...
400 books, friend. You should be in the Guinness Book of World Records for reading novels.
I'm a Guinness Book of
reading novels. You should get like the $25,000 check that Jack Palance used to hand out, or whoever that was, when Guinness Book of World Records.
That's funny, because your book, she goes like, did you read it already? I go like, what are you talking about? I'm so busy doing, you know, I don't even have time to read it. And she's saying, did you read it yet?
For all you people out there that want Fran Lewis to review your book, let me tell you how it works. You get one sentence emails, and you almost can't believe it, because she says, I'm going to, as soon as your book comes in, I'm very busy, I'm reading something else, da, 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 and so you kind of forget about it. Like 3 days later, she finished her 86,000 word book, and when I read her review, I was like, was that in the book? She, I mean, she really knows the story.
I know. Oh, she does, absolutely. And it really is true. She does know the story. I mean,
you have to know the story. So when am I getting the next one?
Yeah, and then you
Fran, I hope that you don't hold any of our storylines in your little gray cells, because I think your head will explode with 400 different.
No, you know what happened? That's why I write the questions, because otherwise, you know, sometimes I read the book. Like the people that are coming on my show tomorrow,
I read these books like six months ago,
and I have the questions so that I get reminded. And of course, the books are standing here in a stack over here, saying, "Okay, I have to go over these books tomorrow just to make sure I know I remember what they're about vaguely." Yeah, I usually do, but I want to know. Can you send me a pre-release? I just emailed you too.
Oh, absolutely!
Can you send me a pre-release?
I may send you the proof, Fran.
That's fine. You know why? Because I've got. A show in September. I've got somebody that wrote a book about a meth farm being blown up, which was pretty good, which was really good. And I've got a lawyer coming on for his Barry O'Shea series. He's coming on tomorrow, but he's getting a new book in September. So I was thinking, if you get it to me real fast, I could put you on my September 21st show to promote your book when it comes out.
I am expecting to, you know, wearing the publisher hat here. Trying to finish the book by 4th of July so that it can go into edits, and then you could have the book, in August. I would think that you could have the book towards the end of August. For Fran, that means that you could have read like 47 books from August to September. So
I'm gonna put you. I'm gonna put you down for September. I have you down for December. Well, I can leave you there too. But I have you. I'll put you down for September. For September 21st. But my show is at 3:00 in the afternoon.
Okay. I guess you ladies never come out Las Vegas way, but you know now that you have a friend, an author friend
here. Okay, I will. Good, I will. If we,
I guess you
don't
know where. It's really bad.
Well, now I know. We both said we need to have that vacation. I think we need one.
I definitely think non-reading vacation.
Yeah, I'm getting one this weekend. I'm getting my three teenage nephews. They're all mine. My brother told me.
Do you want to talk about your show before we go? We're going to leave the show. And Jared, I want to thank you so much, Gerard, because it was just a good, and just everything you said, I'm sure, when other authors are listening, it's really was so important, you know, and I'm happy you came on the show. I really am. And Fran, thank you for telling me about this book. Like, she sends me the book. She says, let's do a show with them. I go, fine. And then that's when she sends me the questions. And I told you about this before. She sends me the questions, and then I don't read them. Then she does her own questions.
I try so hard to be helpful here.
I know, but that's how you are. You write the questions right away. You give them to me.
My mother was like that. My mother always told me, I was doing book reports, Gerard, when I was 5. I was reading when I was 4. And my mother would make me sit with index cards and take notes as I read every single book. So by the time I got to first grade and had to do book reports, which as an educator I found, like, you know, total not really the most important thing in the world to do book reports because they used to copy the back of the book or whatever. I was all set.
How about Cliff Notes? Did they do Cliff Notes? Those
they had Cliff Notes, but you know what? As an educator, I could tell you when kids use Cliff Notes, so I was not allowed to do it, no. And my mother edited everything, and I really miss her. But tomorrow's show, I've got Rick Doyen, who wrote Up Country. I've got Jerry Banks for his Barry O'Shea series. We're going to talk about 3 of his books. And I've got Dr. Maxine Thompson, Hostage of Lies. And sitting inside is her manuscript that came yesterday of L.A. Blues, her new book. And tomorrow, if I'm really full of energy, I will scan it so I can at least read part of it. And I know pretty much what it's about, but I probably won't get to read the whole book because I do have 2 others that I have to finish, one that I started this morning and one I'll probably finish tomorrow. And if you listen to my show at 3 o'clock tomorrow, you'll get to know my top 5 picks for this month. And one will include a famous author whose book is going to be a movie, I think, we hope. And I have a new poetry book that I think is absolutely fantastic by another author. So if you listen tomorrow with me, you'll know Fran's top 5 picks for the month, and you know that Gerard's book was my top pick for February.
I'll be listening to your show, and, you know, we're thankful that Blog Talk, everything went well, and we didn't get kicked off.
That's a miracle in itself.
Yes. Right, we're happy. And, you know, and I just want to say, Virginia's show tomorrow at 6 Eastern. I have a show. I'm doing a show on Saturday because it's about my books, my 99-cent tick books for the children's books. And I'm also having Debbie Sue Goodman on the show. And we will be talking about, we're going to talk about men and finding the right guy. And she has, and if there's women are single, because we're going to be at Barnes & Noble, both of us, next week. The 23rd, and I have to get out a little more going on. And so I want to thank Gerard, and I want to thank you, Fran, for telling me about
Welcome.
Gerard. And it was a great show, and Fran, I'll listen to your show tomorrow.
Oh, good.
Marsha, Fran, thank you so much.
All right, thank you. All right, take care. Have a good night, everybody, and thank you, everybody. Good night.
You too, Gerard. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay.